The following interview was conducted with Charles A. Trichler, Professor Emeritus of Management for the Purdue University Oral History Program. It took place on Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010, in Stewart Center. The interviewer is Catherine Marquis, the Oral History Librarian. Welcome. Good afternoon, Professor Trichler.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, tell us a little about where you were born and early years and your parents,
sure.
Siblings.
I was born in Chicago, Illinois. I mainly went to school in Evanston, Illinois, a northern suburb of Chicago, and graduated from Evanston High School in 1947. My main activities there were the YMCA and study. And I got a scholarship to Amherst College, which I went to and enjoyed thoroughly. You're asking what the major event of my life was. This was certainly going to Amherst College.
And I imagine you went by train in those days, huh?
Or drove.
Oh, drove, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both.
Okay.
But there were four of us went from Evanston High School to Amherst. The previous year there was eight, the next year six. It was a major kind of feeder school to Amherst. In those days, it wasn't the usual thing to attend Northwestern. You went away to school if you could. I was a fair student. I was elected to Phi Beta Kappa and that sort of thing. Then I went into the military, was in the Army, and went to Germany, was in the Quartermaster Corps, which was the first taste of what I eventually went into in business. But when I came out of the Army, they didn't have a placement bureau or anything, so I went to Yale, which I'd been accepted to as a graduate student in English, the PhD program. But that really wasn't the same as reading Catcher in the Rye as an undergraduate. I had to do Beowulf and Old English, Anglo-Saxon, and take exams in Latin and German and French. And so it really didn't fit for me. And so I got an MBA at Northwestern and worked for a while, and then taught at Northwestern at night, and I liked that. So I switched to getting a PhD at Stanford, and then I came to Purdue, and I've been at Purdue since then. Of course, I've gone on sabbaticals, visiting positions, largely in Europe and so on. And I retired in 1999 when I was 70. And I've been very active I find myself very active in retirement. And I get the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal every day and hardly have time to read it. You'd earlier looked at some of the activities.
Yes.
I'm treasurer. I've been treasurer of lots of things because I majored in accounting within the business area at Stanford and taught accounting at Purdue. Did you want to ask me a question?
I was going to elaborate a little bit about Purdue and about some of the faculty advising and also when you were the director of the Krannert Master's Program, some of your experiences at Purdue in the Krannert School.
Well, that is interesting. Could I sort of go chronologically?
Sure, that would be helpful.
So, I wasn't young when I arrived here, because I was married and
had
three children.
Okay.
And
what was the campus like, though, when you came? You came in the 60s, correct?
Late 67,
60s?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was kind of transformative at Krannert. M. Weiler was the dean who just started up the school and
mm-hmm.
just gotten the money from Krannert to fund it. And the Krannert faculty were all kind of new to Purdue. And it was very much oriented to economics. and was not that much of a business school, although M. Weiler started up the master's program, which was sort of modeled on the MBA at Harvard. And the Cranford School was something sort of apart, because like there was a whole bunch of us from Stanford, for example.
Oh, some others came with you from Stanford at the same time?
Either before or after.
Oh, okay.
There were one that came with me at the same time, but there were a couple from previous years and a couple afterwards.
Okay.
Who came from Stanford. But most faculty came from Harvard. Like John C. was the originator of the master's program in business, and John Day was associate dean and then dean. Both of them were doctoral degrees from Harvard, and there were a lot of Harvard PhDs, more than Stanford. And then along came the great turn left in the United States with the civil rights controversy in the Vietnam War and all the assassinations of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And so the Cranford School was relatively liberal because it was new to Purdue, and the rest of Purdue was fairly conservative, especially the agriculture school. And of course, there was a whole change at Purdue that I wouldn't know as much about it after World War II, with all the GIs coming back and the GI Bill and all. But we live on the property of Dean Reed. He might not have been the founding dean of agriculture, but the central figure,
yes. Oh, interesting. Okay.
And there's a sort of vintage racial covenant on the property, that though all those things existed in those days.
In those days, uh-huh.
And was,
excuse me, was the Cranford building built when you came, though? I mean, it was.
Yes,
okay.
It had just been built.
Okay, okay.
Just been finished.
Okay.
And,
excuse me.
So then along came the civil rights movement. And, of course, Lafayette and Purdue had been segregated. And there were big signs from the John Birch Society and so on, opposing the UN, opposing civil rights, opposing Martin Luther King. They're like billboards. And by the time I arrived, blacks were in the classrooms and in the dormitories, which wasn't the case before. And the big development first years was women. Now there were women in home economics and so on, but there weren't women like in the Cranford School. The Cranford School was built without restrooms for lady students. And there were a few female students, and they, of course, went up to the higher floors to the secretary restrooms. And my wife got an MBA from Michigan, and she went through the same transition, but Michigan had many more ladies. MBAs and PhDs than Purdue did. And my wife went from an MBA at Michigan to work for IBM, but when she came here, she just raised the children until they'd gotten into high school, and then she taught school.
Mm-hmm.
and we came to Lafayette as Episcopalians. We actually had one of those letters of transmittal like they had, and we discovered that the St. John's and Good Shepherd were battling over the resident Episcopalians. And the St. John's minister came to our house a week or two after we'd arrived and told us in no uncertain terms that we should come to St. John's, and but we went to Good Shepherd instead. And it has been a dicey operation all along, Good Shepherd, and we still go there now. And that was the first of my many Treasury volunteer operations at Good Shepherd. And Good Shepherd housed the SAS, the Students for SDS, Students for Democratic.
SDS, right.
What is that, right? How do you say that? I forget. One of the things about being 81 is that you forget so many things. It is hard to remember. But going back so far, I can sort of fill it all in.
Mm-hmm.
So then the...
Excuse me, the house that you live in now, is that the one you bought when you came?
No.
Oh,
we
okay.
We lived in the Rene Maness, another faculty member's house that was going to Stanford as a sabbatical. So we just moved into their house, and then we moved across the street on Indian Trail. And then we moved down on Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
So the next development after civil rights was the Vietnam War. And that was sort of the heyday of the growth of the Craner business program, because students had to stay in school to keep out of the service, or if they'd been in the service, they came back and wanted a degree. And we were originally a training ground for business, for engineers, or science students. And that's mostly what we had. And I think there was one woman in the first class in 67, 68, and a scattering. But after the Vietnam War, there were many women. At any rate, can I tell you a little bit about the Vietnam period?
Sure.
So there was great opposition to the war on campuses, less so at Purdue than practically any Big Ten school. But there was a sit-in. Do you remember that?
Yes.
You do remember?
Oh, yes.
Sit-in in the Union? So I'm not making things up?
Oh, no. Many others have alluded to who were here during that time. They often refer to it as the unrest, time unrest, student unrest or whatever. They have different classifications for it, yes.
So I'm glad that other people have talked about this and verified it. Mm-hmm. And I had... a student in class, an undergraduate, who was on the football team and who was the leader of the opposition to the peaceniks in the Union. Mm-hmm. He was the leader of the group that threw them out of the Union. It was sort of a violent kind of confrontation. And he didn't come to class, and he was married. And I talked to his wife about his not coming to class. But you couldn't exactly object to that, because the left-wing students were also, as well as the right-wing, both groups were boycotting classes. Have you heard about that? Classes not being attended?
No.
And... So there was a whole question of what faculty should do. And so
they just didn't come at all?
Yeah.
Not just one or two times?
That was in the spring. That was the year that there was the Kent State affair.
Uh-huh.
And the shooting at Kent State. And after that, there was kind of a boycott of going to class. And so what we ended up doing was just passing both groups, the left-wingers and the right-wingers. And however many of the left-wing students were better students than the right-wing students, you know, so the right-wing group was well represented on the athletic teams and so on, and the fraternities and sororities. So we had some of our students in jail, and we ran bail for them to get them out. Those were mostly the sit-in types, and so that was a great transformation at Purdue. But the same thing was going on at the West Lafayette High School. And one of the Korean students, the valedictorian, gave the famous speech at West Lafayette High School, ridiculing the Golden Ghetto, and that it was not a commencement, but just a continuation of the same thing. There was a similar kind of division at the high school, and a good many of the left-wing students refused to attend the commencement at the high school. So it was a time of tremendous transformation. Purdue became sort of like Wisconsin and Michigan and so on. But as you said, it was described as unrest rather than rebellion.
Well, some people probably have different terminology in how they express it, you know.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Did you have a question?
I was going to ask, continue on with, after that, then what was the next? And also, I would like you to address some of the research that you've been involved with.
Well, I was more of a teacher than a researcher.
Okay.
And I will get to that in just a second. So you asked earlier about, off camera, so to speak,
sure,
about being director of the master's program. So I became director of the master's program. And that was very demanding. There weren't administrators then.
You were it.
Yeah, pretty much. And there was a graduate student that helped me. And then I just continued teaching a full load while I was director of the master's program. Now the director of the master's program is a full-time administrator job.
Did the master's program, was it increasing over time too while you were there in charge?
Well, it was very strong and high quality because of this business of the students wanting to avoid going in the military, or they were coming back from the military. And the students coming back from the military were very motivated, and most of them had engineering or scientific kind of exposure in the military in addition to their undergraduate degrees. So it was an excellent program, and even the Coast Guard and the Air Force sent officers to come here, as did General Motors Institute, which is now Kettering University.
Right.
And they paid for their graduates to come to Cranor to get business degrees. And one of the things they liked was it was a one-year program. Well, I was the director until they switched to a two-year program. And it didn't really mesh very well for me because, like, the dean brought in Governor Rhodes from Ohio, who had ordered the National Guard into Kent State as the speaker at our main event, sort of
the
graduation
commencement
dinner.
Okay.
It wasn't commencement.
But a graduation, yeah, completion of the program?
Well, it was short of. Okay. It was before the completion of the program. Because they didn't want to interfere with the university level commencement. And so that was pretty troublesome. And there was kind of this left-right division running through the university. And now that sort of thing is really passé, but it wasn't then. And so we went off to Belgium for a couple of years, and I taught an executive MBA for Boston University in Brussels, and the children went to Belgian schools. And
it was a good experience for you.
Well, it was, but it kind of breaks up your
sure.
integration to Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't want to go over there and just come back in a semester.
Right.
And
yeah.
if the children were going to go.
Right.
And they really, really enjoyed the schools there. And our son got very involved with soccer, which he continued. And there was a curious thing, you know, even now with the World Cup,
sure.
you read about it in the paper. Purdue does not have a men's soccer team. And that's kind of an extrapolation of the culture that I'm talking about that you encountered, you know, coming from Ivy League schools like I did, going to, as I said, Amherst out of high school and Yale, and then Northwestern and Stanford, they were all private schools.
Right, yeah.
And soccer was the standard sport at those schools.
Another one was archery. They'd have that too, you know.
Well, that why did you bring that up? I wouldn't think of archery as being a World Cup kind of.
Not a World Cup, but it's like an intramural. But many of those schools would have had it. We had it at school when I went to college.
Well, I think yeah, and of course. We lived through when the great thing after the Vietnam War was women coming in, and so
women's
athletics. That women, well, and in the classroom,
right? Oh,
at
sure.
the Cranor School,
mm-hmm.
and in engineering, a lot of women, and they were good students, and then the wave after that was the foreign students coming in after the women had pretty much settled in and integrated. Then with a great influx of foreign students, and there were a lot of them in the Cranor School, and it was sought after and recognized because of its national rating, and it wasn't just Taiwan and India, and China wasn't in the first wave because it was still communist, but there were a lot. Students from Japanese students and Malaysian students, and we had a strong program there.
Mm-hmm.
You were asking about research earlier,
uh-huh.
and my research to begin with, my dissertation out of Stanford won the prize in the Academic Association. But it was about inflation, and inflation was very high, but and inflation dwindled to nothing, so I switched over to international, because I'd been teaching in Belgium, and I later went to taught at Louvain, that's the way you say it in English, and in Flemish it's Louvain. And I taught in the Flemish division in Louvain. And I taught at the University of Helsinki one summer in Finland. These are all countries where English is the main academic language because their own language is not widely used. So Finnish is impossible to read or speak. And,
I would think so. I have problems with that.
The Flemish is a little better because it's the sort of dialect of Dutch. And but I was in taught in Belgium twice, lived there twice. And so I went into international research, and then in my closing days I got very interested in derivatives, so I was ahead of my time in terms of that subject. And to begin with, it was derivatives involving foreign exchange, futures, whereby you could bet on which direction foreign currency rates were going to go. And of course that passed on to interest rates, and after my time, credit default swaps, that sort of thing. Another big change over that period was the use of the computer. And I invested a lot in that. And it wasn't just using PowerPoint, but actually doing the accounting on the computer and displaying it in front of the room. And that was a big emphasis in terms of the last 15 or 20 years of my career. Should we close with that?
I'd like to ask you a couple things. Talk about family. Did your children go to Purdue?
Well, of course, they attended classes at Purdue,
okay.
But none of them went to Purdue.
Okay. And do you have the awards and honors I want to talk. First of all, you got that one from the Accounting Association for that manuscript contest. That was very nice. And then the Norton Outstanding Teacher Award,
yes,
at the Craner, and the Honeywell.
Thank you for bringing these up.
And the Honeywell Master Teaching Award.
Yes, thank you.
Were any of them a surprise? Sometimes I ask people that, or did you sort of know that you might be getting it? Sometimes people are surprised. Some aren't. Sometimes they're not. They have a clue.
I mean, I didn't get them multiple times, so yes, they were surprises.
That's nice.
I also entered in actively to the Amherst College alumni activities. I became vice president of the class and the class of 51 at Amherst, and also I have been maintaining their web page, and the web page keeps track of students that we funded with honors or scholarships, the various activities of the classmates, and unfortunately obituaries.
Very nice. That's good. The community, you're active in the local community.
I try to, I've been treasurer of a number of organizations, which fits mm-hmm. in with my being a CPA and accounting professor. As I said, the first was at the church, Good Shepherd, and then Phi Beta Kappa, and the ACLU, the Lafayette Adult Resource Academy on the boards of these, and the Aquinas Educational Foundation at St. Thomas. And that is a special honor because I'm not actually Catholic. But I've been very involved with religion, I think, and interested in the Catholic Church. And during the Vatican II days, we were very involved with St. Thomas. And the priests there showed great leadership, especially during like the Vietnam War period, able to maintain a middle ground. Mm-hmm. Father Hagerty and Father Pickett, and, that's continued on. Of course, the Dominicans
are there now,
mm-hmm. And they provide great leadership. And the Dominicans also were in charge of the Catholic program at Stanford when we were there.
Right.
And although we went to the Episcopal Church, we were involved with the Catholic student activities there as well.
Uh-huh. What about, do you have a Purdue tradition that you like, any tradition of Purdue's that you'd like to share with us? Or an outstanding event?
Well, actually, we don't buy tickets to the football and basketball games. We have often gone
sure.
with friends, or when people come from out of town, we try to get some tickets if they want to go. So it isn't like we never go. We got nothing against it, but it really isn't something.
We're not season ticket holders, in other words. But you can get tickets.
But I think the greatest tradition is trying to meet up with alumni when they come back.
Yeah.
And our son, I said, played soccer, and they went to the state finals. And then he was quarterback of an undefeated team, so we went to most of his games, beginning with Little League and on through the next 8 years. So we saw 8 years of football. Maybe that was the reason we didn't thought that going to football on Saturday after a Friday night game was more than we could handle.
It is quite a bit.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And we didn't go to all the away games, but we went to a lot of football games. And because he was quarterback, we were always worried about him, whether he'd get hurt and
sure.
and how well the team would do and so on. And they did do fairly well.
Right. And this year they did extremely well.
Well, that's true, and the boys this year were far better students than the students the year that they went undefeated. They were defeated in the state. It's up or out in the state
yeah,
tournament.
Yeah, I understand.
I spoke earlier about soccer not being a Purdue tradition, and the soccer team went to the state finals, and they should have won actually, but I think they're worn out because they played football Friday night and Saturday they played soccer. That isn't allowed anymore, but the high school vigorously opposed having a soccer team because it drew from the other sports, and they barely had enough boys to go around without having a soccer team. And David was the same year as Jonathan Briggs, who became the kicker for Purdue, and until recently had held all the records. And his father had been a professional soccer player, and he coached the team. And it was really a big deal. But if you looked, you were talking about yearbooks. Well, of course, yearbooks were a big deal, and the soccer team wasn't even mentioned in the yearbook, and hardly in the newspaper. Occasionally, there'd be some little article, but now there's, you know, big articles about the boy and girl soccer teams.
Yeah. Right.
Did you have another question?
I'm coming down to the wire, but one, two things. In closing comments, anything you'd like to say that I forgot to ask? And anything else? You covered your retirement activities, I was going to ask. So you keep, and you do some traveling.
Well, we have traveled a lot.
Right.
I don't know. I guess we're up to 60 countries we've been in. And in addition to Belgium and Finland, where we worked. Of course, I was in the army in Germany as a boy. And then we lived a semester in Buenos Aires. And we share with you an interest in the Mayan culture in both Guatemala and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we've spent time in places like Guatemala, and we've been to Egypt and Israel, and all through Europe, of course. In the times that we were in Europe, we would travel. Just. And that's a nice part of traveling when you're living there and working there, because you can just go for a long weekend, and especially with kids. You're there, it's not really suited to doing touring, and it all blurs together. You can hardly tell one church or museum from the next, so you have to go in small doses.
Sure, exactly. I think I'll leave it up to you. Anything that I forgot to ask, or
I don't think so.
You think so? You
more
think
than, more than enough.
Oh,
very. It's a great honor to have been included with your oral history, and I don't know. Are there other universities that have this?
Well, I think there are quite a few. A lot of museums, a lot of people have it, but I think Purdue. I don't believe the regional campuses are doing it, because I've interviewed a couple of people at.
How about Indiana University?
Yes, they have a program.
They do?
Yeah,
okay.
They do, right, as far as I know. Thank you, Dr. Trister. Appreciate that. This concludes.